Welcome to the Just Raise podcast. Today on the show, we're talking to a delivery company. But this one isn't using bike messengers or Uber drivers. They're using robots that will deliver you your burrito via pipes underground. Pipe Dream Labs, one of the best named companies I've ever had on the show, is a hyper logistics company. They want to use maintenance pipes to build a new kind of last mile logistics network. It's pretty much Elon Musk's boring company crossed with GoPuff. And while I was a bit skeptical coming into the show, this conversation was convincing, and it might be a lot cheaper to build these type of networks than you might expect. No matter what though, these are the kind of big moonshot ideas we need more of. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Garrett McCurrick, founder and CEO of Pipe Dream. I'm a big fan of Marketer Hire. They're matching elite marketing professionals with ambitious startups and founders. Using advanced AI and thorough vetting, Marketer Hire will match your business with a top-tier marketer, and they'll do it fast. Get signed up today and find your marketing professional at marketerhire.com. It is awesome to have you on the show. I'm talking to you literally from your garage, and you are building Pipe Dream Labs. So to start us off, what is Pipe Dream and what are you building?
Yeah. And thank you so much for having me. But at Pipe Dream, we're building underground robots, essentially. So it's a method for putting underground pipes, just like you have water or sewage in a city, and then having robots run through that to deliver things from point to point around town.
All right. So before we dive into the actual technology and how you're getting this through cities, what's kind of the thesis for Pipe Dream? How does this fit into the broader market right now?
When we started Pipe Dream, we didn't really want to do underground delivery. Like, that wasn't even something that we were thinking about. Really, what we were looking at is like, okay, where is last mile logistics going? I think last mile logistics right now is in a really great place where, like, if I need a coffee, like I got my coffee delivered this morning, I can have lunch delivered. If I need a drink, medicine, if I want like some convenience item delivered, I haven't delivered, I can have it delivered within an hour, but it's really expensive. And so we're looking at like, okay, like this consumer behavior is really interesting. That's not going anywhere, but where is last mile logistics going? What is the next stage of it? And that's when we came up with, you know, really where Pipe Dream started was looking at this, you know, new world that last mile logistics has the opportunity to go into, which is what we call hyper logistics. And like what we defined hyper logistics as was the ability to have, you know, you can achieve hyper logistics if you in a city can have something that is currently in the city delivered to another place in the city in single digit minutes for a nominal cost. So like under a dollar, and just as easy as you can receive from that network, you can send back out. And that's really where Pipe Dream started, where we were like, if you can achieve that state, you can build some really crazy businesses on top of that infrastructure. And also, like, there's so many benefits that you get from that. And it's not really that far off. Like, there's some infrastructure that needs to exist to make that possible, but it's not like an impossible thing. And so really what Pipe Dream started as, where we said, okay, we're going to dedicate the next 10 to 20 years of our lives making hyperlogistics possible as quickly as possible. So that's really where Pipe Dream started was, you know, we went through some mental experiments to get to what eventually led us to Pipe Dream. But that, you know, remains the goal today.
So you're in the last mile delivery space, like a Joker or a Gorillas or GoPuff. But instead of doing what they're doing, which is dozens of micro warehouses all over Manhattan and anything delivered within 10 minutes, you're doing that, but with 12-inch pipes underground. And that's the thesis. And you just raised a pre-seed for that. How do you actually get these pipes in the ground? And how do you imagine them working? I know there's a robotics piece to this.
Yeah, I think getting them in the ground is like the hardest part. So like back to how we started, you know, we didn't want to do underground because it seems way too hard, way too expensive. And so when we were targeting hyperlogistics, we initially started drones. Me and my co-founder have a lot of experience in drones. We've done a lot of autonomous drone projects before. Like, we're obsessed with drones. And so we're like, okay, if we're going to make hyperlogistics possible, this is a drone play. Let's do drones. And there's a lot of great people doing drones. But what we realized is like the drones aren't the problem to make hyperlogistics possible. Really what's missing is that like really fast, high volume, very safe infrastructure in cities that's ground-based. And as we started looking at the ground-based options, that's when we asked ourselves like, okay, pretty congested up top. Like if you need to go very fast, it's really hard to do above ground. Can you do that underground? Because that would solve all of our safety concerns. That would allow us to go as fast as we want. And we really didn't want to. We were like, okay, it seems way too expensive. There's a huge regulatory problem. And so as we were diligencing it, you know, that's when we said, okay, if you're going to make something like this scale, you know, what needs to be true? And we said, if you're going to make something underground work, it needs to be one, as cheap as possible. So like as cheap as possible to put in, the material needs to be as cheap as possible. And it can never break. If your infrastructure, what you're putting underground breaks and you have to dig it up to fix it, well, you've just lost all the return on investment you ever were going to see from that, right? Digging something up to fix it is super expensive. And so that's why we decided to use just normal 12-inch PVC pipe, which is exactly what cities already use for sewage and water. So one, it's, you know, it exists in abundance. And then two, every city has like 7 construction companies that already put that infrastructure underground in the city. So, you know, when we go to a city and one, get permits, or two, like we need to put it underground, we just get a contract from one of those companies and they go and put it ground. It's like a very normal everyday thing that they do. And then the real secret and like what turns that from just a normal tunnel into a logistics network is we have put all the technology that would normally be in the infrastructure, we've put that into the pod itself. So the pod is a completely autonomous robot, essentially, that can navigate that pipe network and deliver things from place to place.
So it's a robot on wheels that will drive through these tunnels and deliver anything, you know, under 12 inches.
I think even a robot is maybe giving it more than it's worth. It's basically like a super high-powered RC car, like rolled up into a burrito.
So this is like Elon Musk's Boring Company, but on a much, much smaller scale.
Kind of. Like, I think Boring Company is going after the same problem, except they're trying to move humans and we're trying to move like burritos. So it's definitely different. And I think when they went to it, they said, you know, underground's a safe, great opportunity to move things really fast, but there's a technology problem where we can't dig efficiently enough and cheap enough to make this possible. So we need to innovate on the drilling side to get that cost down. Mm-hmm. And so when we went, you know, thinking through the same problem, but, you know, for burritos instead of humans, luckily, a lot of innovation has already taken place because of the utility network. So there are tons of like really interesting ways to drill in cities without having to tear up roads. It's called trenchless, you know, there's trenchless technologies. There's a lot of them, where you can just like go in at an entry point, go underground, and then pop up. And so we're just riding off the back of those. So it's already gotten really cheap. So luckily, you know, when we, you know, we're diligencing this the first time, we're like, yeah, maybe we do have to come up with some interesting, cheap way to drill. But luckily that already existed. So I think we're like going after very similar problems, but theirs is much, much harder than ours is.
One of the biggest challenges that you have to overcome in your list, I imagine, is getting into the ground. So what does that actually look like? Do you have to tear up roads? Do you go through subway systems or sewer tunnels? Is there a way to avoid tearing things up? Or do you expect to have construction crews run through in your whatever cities you launch in first and start putting in pipe? How does that work?
I think it's one of those... Great question. It's one of those things that like until you understand how utility lines are put in, I had this idea that, oh, okay, you got to tear up the roads and like you got to stop traffic and you got to like dig under there and put stuff in. But there's actually like hundreds of miles put in every city all the time. So like underground infrastructure is being installed constantly. And if you know what machines are used, you start to see it happen everywhere. You need an entry point a lot of the times, and sometimes that can be with what is called a horizontal directional drill, which is like this angled drill. that like goes underground and goes under the roads. And that just sits on the side, kind of near the sidewalk. And you need like a 5 by 5 foot area that you've dug to get that in. Sometimes you have to dig it a little bigger to get someone in there and do what is like a jack and bore. But largely, roads don't need to be torn up. There may be some edge cases where that is true. But in our experience so far, and in experience of advisors, 99% can just be done off on the side. There's probably, you know, you or whoever's listening, there's probably underground infrastructure being installed in your city today. You've probably driven over a drill sometime in the last week.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the drone piece is something I've heard pitched before, mostly by electric vertical takeoff and landing vehicle companies and people building effectively flying cars. And it makes sense as, you know, if you can go above the one layer of road, then there's a ton of opportunity to move things around faster. The challenge is then you have drones flying around cities, which is tricky. And then you have Elon Musk arguing for going under via the Boring Company. But putting pipes in the ground is interesting because, like you said, there's already this technology to do it. What do you think it's going to cost to put in a mile of pipe or whatever unit it is that you use?
It's crazy how much it differs from like city to city. It's definitely in the six figures a mile, but it is wildly different depending on the soil composition, labor, like what the city requires, what technology is available. It's really comes down to like, fundamentally, what tooling can you use to install it? Like the horizontal directional drill, like it gets priced down because it's just, you don't have to dig as many holes to put it in. So it wires a lot. But like fundamentally, when we're looking at, is this worthwhile to put in? And that's where a lot of our time is spent right now is like, can you build the initial network in a city small enough so it's like feasible to put in from a cost perspective? But valuable enough that you have a 4-year ROI. That's our target. Is like anything we put in, we want to have a 4-year ROI on it. That's where like a lot of our brain power and we've built a lot of tooling, some simulators to like try to figure out like what is that right size of that network. But like eclipsing the initial cost of the network in 4 years, that's our goal. And maybe a bit aggressive from an infrastructure standpoint. Like most infrastructure doesn't try to recoup in 4 years. But I think like if we're going to scale, like we got a cold start problem where like we need to scale really quick. So I think if we're going to scale really quick, we got to have like really aggressive ROIs. You know, sewage is a great comp because it's kind of the same size. It goes all over the place. It goes into every home and building. But sewage was a technology that existed kind of before America was built out. So they had the benefit of going in, before everything was put in. Which is nice. Like on new builds, this technology is so cheap to install. It's really the retrofit that is so expensive.
So if this works, diving into your vision a little bit, how do you imagine it changes how cities operate?
My dream, like fundamentally, is to live in a city that's, what we call like hyper logistics. That's what we call like that next stage of logistics. That's hyper logistics enabled. A city can achieve hyperlogistics when, I think I already explained this before, but like you can have something delivered in single digit minutes for a nominal cost. And then just as easy you can receive from the network, you can send back out. And what's so magical about living in a city that has that type of logistics available is you get to offload all the stuff that you own. All the stuff that I store in my home and that I use, I really just have it around for convenience. And, when I need a screwdriver, when I need some salt, when I need a t-shirt, I can't order it because it's going to take too long to get here. I need it right now. So I just store it in my home. But when you get those delivery times down and you get the cost down, well, there's really not a huge difference between ordering it and storing it now. So instead of owning that t-shirt, I can just order it when I need it. Instead of owning that screwdriver, I order it when I need it, I use it, and then I can send it back. And one, the magical thing about that is, kind of like the internet has done with like entertainment. Well, now instead of buying each individual thing that I own, now I can pay a subscription and have access to a whole library of t-shirts, a whole library of tools, a whole library of ingredients, have them delivered, use them, then send it back. But what's super interesting about that, and it's kind of like why we started Pipe Dream, is once you achieve that, there starts to be this nice marriage between consumerism and environmentalism, where people don't have to throttle or change their consumer habits. You know, if they don't want to, they don't have to be more minimal. They can wear a whole variety of clothes, have a whole library of tools. But because they're ordering it, using it, and sending it back, now the world doesn't need to produce 10 billion t-shirts. It doesn't need to produce like 10, 15 billion screwdrivers so that everyone has them in their homes. Now, the world only needs like a couple million of each thing, because like hyperlogistics means that, you know, that t-shirt now, instead of sitting in a closet 90% of the time, is now being worn every day, or in the screwdrivers being used all the time. So that's what really drives me, is getting to that state. Like, one, you know, what kind of businesses can you build on top of that? What more access to things does everyone have now? But really, like, how much more we can do with less resources? That's what really, like, that's just so cool. I just can't wait to live in a city like that someday.
It's a pretty wild idea, anything on demand anywhere. I never thought about it that way. And you can build subscriptions off that. How did you get here? You and your co-founders, were you building drones before? Were you digging tunnels? What were you doing that got you to be building this like fundamentally new infrastructure robotics play?
Yeah, definitely not drilling tunnels. I not a big tunnel guy until recently. You know, really what it was is like I was a mechanical engineer, just because like I think me and Cannon and Drew, like, we all share, like, we love building stuff. And we love building stuff that are useful for people. So that, you know, whether that's for Cannon, that's, you know, going to be a robot. He's huge in robotics. Drew, that's going to be like some like research into something. And for me, it's like, I love building business models. So I was an engineer by trade, but like realized pretty soon after engineering school that like my real love was building companies or services. So coming out of college, I decided not to get an engineering job, instead just like start to learn business by building stuff online. And then two, everything I've been doing is like, it's been fine. It's been making money. I've been learning, but it's not like something that I could see really scaling. And so I was like, you know, I'm going to shut all that down and go and focus on running biz dev at this startup and kind of give myself 2 years. And at this date, I'm going to leave. And I told them like, okay, I got 2 years. And then this date, I'm going to leave and I'm going to go do my own thing. So it kind of gave me time to take a step back and be really thoughtful about what that bet is going to be. And so during those 2 years, that's when we looked at a lot of industries and like, okay, what is going to be like the predominant theme of the late 20s, early 30s? Like, that's where we should focus on right now. We should get ahead of it. And last mile was that thing where a lot of last mile has been very iterative. And two, like, we just have a deep love for it. Like, we love last mile. Even as a kid, like, my very first like invention I ever told my dad about was like, it was a last mile idea. And like through college, I like started a whole bunch of like delivery company ideas and just loved it. And so we were like, okay, that's when we said like, all right, last mile is that thing that we're going to take a bet on. You know, where is last mile going? What's that next thing? Kind of like, you know, FedEx did this with jets. You know, it was predominantly trucks and that's how everything got around. And then FedEx was like, hey, maybe you could use airplanes to fly mail in between cities. And people were like, why? That's ridiculous. Why would you use a whole airplane to one day mail? Who needs one day mail? But they did it, and it changed logistics. And there hasn't been something like that recently. And so we were asking like, okay, in that same way that like one day mail changed logistics, like, what is that next thing? So we started at like, okay, let's go all the way to the end. Teleportation. Like, if someone could crack teleportation, probably last mile logistics is solved. And so working backwards from that, like, what is going to be that next step? And that's how we got to hyperlogistics and just fell in love with that idea. And it seemed really doable, like super doable. Like, it seemed like we had the technology to do it and just no one was pushing for it. And also just like so much money to be made in that industry once it exists. So we said, okay, that's our goal. So like now, if that's our goal is make hyperlogistics possible this decade, then what is missing from the current landscape to make that possible? And that's when, you know, we looked at drones and like we really thought we were going to do drones because like, oh, we still love drones. I think drones are going to be a huge part of hyperlogistics. But, you know, they're really like to turn a city all hyperlogistics, there really needs to be that ground-based, high volume, very safe, very fast method as well to go alongside drones. And that's really what seemed to be missing. That was like the missing piece. And we think between that, drone, self-driving cars, sidewalk robots, like we could turn a city hyperlogistics, you know, within the next few years. And so, you know, as we were looking at, okay, what ground-based systems would work, that's when we asked, like, we were like, okay, dangerous question. Could you do underground? Does that even make any sense? And through the diligence process of that, we're like, okay, we're just going to look at that. We're going to ask people until we find a reason not to do it. And I'm sure it'll take like 2 seconds to find a reason not to do it. And then here we are like a year and a half later, we just haven't found a reason, hasn't found a reason not to do it. So that it was pretty clear to us that was the missing, it was missing piece that no one was working on. And is why we decided to go for it.
I've been incredibly impressed by your robotics. You told me the other day that you don't believe in CGI, and I've looked through all of your marketing material, and there are a lot of robots and videos and things like that. And the fact that you've built all of that literally in your garage is pretty impressive.
I want to be super clear. I have not built a lot recently. Maybe like very early days, I've built a lot of them, and I'm a mechanical engineer, but man, the engineers we have on the team are just like, I don't feel right even calling myself an engineer, but they're the real wizards. Like, truly, like the things they can build in a day are insane.
Every time I ask a founder, what is most important to you right now? They say hiring. Finding the right people is tough, which is why Marketer Hire has created a frictionless hiring process for businesses looking to hire marketing professionals. And I've got to say, it's impressive. They make it easy to match elite marketing professionals to businesses like yours fast. Sign up today and get matched with a no-risk trial at marketerhire.com. So you were talking about how you liked business models. I think what's interesting about this business is kind of the go-to-market, how you think of the stages of what you're going to deploy in what order. Because when you think of something like GoPuff is really valuable when they've built everything, because then they can reach anyone. They have a big enough network to get anything to anyone in the city overnight. But for you to build something that big all at once, you need to lay a lot of pipe. And instead, I imagine you'll lay, you know, one pipe or two or three or a couple miles worth and go from there. But what do you think about when you look at go-to-market and staging that?
Yeah, no, this is it. Because it's like, yeah, like no one's going to say like, if you could connect even like 50% of homes and businesses, this is a great product. And it's like revolutionary and you'll make a ton of money. No one's arguing that. But the real key here, and like if we die in a year, it's because we missed this and we didn't get this right. This is by far the biggest hole in our entire plan is, can you get that initial network big enough that it's providing value? Because unlike GoPuff, like the nice thing about GoPuff is they can grab an empty building, they can fill it with chips and drinks, and boom, day one, they're providing value for like, let's call it like 5 to 10,000 people around that place, right? They can deliver snacks to them. So like for a pretty low cost, they can start the business model and build network effects on top of that.
They hire a couple Uber delivery guys on bikes who are already going to all those places. They just add a pickup.
Yeah, and that's like a great way to build a business, right? It's like you can prove it, you can test it, and then you can scale it. For us, there's really not that like, oh, I'm going to build like a quarter mile of pipe. That's not going to be helpful for anybody. I just drive a car the same distance. Like, that's not providing value. So the way you think about it is you need it kind of like a subway. I mean, we think of it very much like a subway. Is like, okay, what is the base amount of subway infrastructure and stations and distance that provides value for travelers initially, and then allows you to build stations after that? Because like once you have the, you know, people are using the subway, now building a station, every station you build, you know, has incremental or exponential value and linear cost. So everyone that you add is going to get more and more valuable, and it's easy to build off of that. But if you're just building a subway from a parking lot to a park, and it's like a quarter mile, well, that's really a publicity stunt. That's not that's not valuable. Like, people aren't going to use that. And so that's why we built the simulator, which like allows us to test different configurations of networks and see the impact on delivery and you know, reducing cost. And right now, and this could change next week. right now, what it seems like is that there is, in a city, there is a 10-mile system that you can connect kind of the key districts of a city. And that puts a tremendous ease on delivery costs. So that's right now what we're targeting, is like a small 10-mile, 10 to 15 station system, interconnecting different districts and networks or neighborhoods. But that, like, that's going to change weekly for probably the next like few months, gearing up to the pilot. And the pilot, just to be super clear, is 100% that subway from the parking lot to the park. It is to prove the technology, to demonstrate that it can be done safely, it can be done well, get people kind of used to it, start testing, like, to the analogy, start testing how to get people onto the subway and take people off really well. But it is not the business case. And then that first business case will be the citywide network that we build, that 10-mile system. And that's what we're putting all our energy towards, is like finding the right city for that, getting the right network in place, getting the right partners. But like our goal is by Q3 of next year, we break ground building that out.
What kind of city works well for this? Because I'm in New York, and while it would be great for me to be able to get barbecue from my favorite spot in Harlem, put on like an express robot RC drone and shot down to closer to downtown where I live, I imagine that's going to be tricky to do in New York City. Whereas other cities, I don't know, Miami, I hear, is pretty popular these days. You're in Austin, might work better. But what are the traits that make a good city for this?
There is a density part where, you know, there needs to be like a sprawling suburban city that's like super low density. Right now, based on you know, our simulations, isn't going to have the same effect as like a pretty dense city where there's a lot of apartments, a high density of restaurants. That's really it. So kind of like tier one and tier two cities are going to have the most impact. New York is interesting because New York has really, really great, in some places, infrastructure where they have what's called like a multi-utility tunnel, where they have pre-bore these giant tunnels to put utilities in. So there's space in those. How much space, and like, can we have access to that? That's something to be like determined. But I think New York happens way quicker than some of the other tier one cities, especially Miami. Miami is probably, and I'm going to speak really, I am not an expert here, so I could be completely wrong, but Miami is going to be tough. I think it's an interesting city. It's pretty underwater. It's like the ground's like a swamp, which is fine. It's just like you got to do interesting things to make utilities work there. But there's a lot of people moving there. It's a big city, so maybe someday, but it's definitely not going to be our first. But I bet our first is going to be like a DC, an Austin, a Dallas, a Phoenix, maybe outside of LA, something where there's already a lot of people, there's growth, and like the city is young enough that, you know, we can add a new type of infrastructure and people adapt to it pretty quick.
New York is interesting because, like you said, they already have tunnels, but getting into those tunnels, I imagine, just takes a huge amount of work.
Yeah, totally.
The last set of questions we always have on the show is a lightning round. So a couple questions, bunch of different topics. But the first one is, over the next 3 months, what has to go right for Pipe Dream Labs to take off?
Yeah, for the next 3 months, it's really that. It's getting really locked in on what is the algorithm that informs how to build the right size of networks to start in cities. That is number one. Maybe number two is just hiring. Like, we have done, like, no credit to me, but like, we've attracted some really great people, and keeping that going is also going to be fundamental. Like, we really, to make this work, it's got to be the best of the best people working on this. Those are like the number two things.
Yeah, you're also actively raising right now, right? If there are any VCs listening to this out there.
Yeah. Definitely are.
If you were starting from scratch, what would you do differently?
We were remote for the first year and a half, and we did some really cool things, and like, huge credit to the team. Like, they did some really cool things to make that work. And I think in some ways it worked really well because we were able to hire people really quick, and like, the relocation wasn't a question. That being said, I think we would have moved a lot quicker had we all been in person. That's probably the number one thing I'd do. Maybe controversial, and I love working remote, and I think working remote is great. But I think for this, I think especially on the tech side, it would have been helpful to all be in person 100% of the time.
Yeah, you're also building a robotics company, which it would be helpful to have hands-on literally in.
Yeah. I think the team actually solved for that. Like, everyone did a really good job. I don't think that was the issue. It's more of like flow of ideas, and like, your ideas iterate quicker in person because they're just kind of like being thrown up, tossed around. Whereas remote, there's an incentive to like keep that idea to yourself and then have a meeting on it. And so I think there's like, things would have flowed quicker in person from a like idea standpoint. But like, execution, I think the team largely, where we're at like then, probably is about the same. And then going forward, we're moving to Austin. So we'll all be in person going forward.
Beyond Pipedream, what's one company that you think is really interesting right now?
Yeah, one that exists right now, or one that...
Do you have any that don't exist right now that you think are interesting?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I feel like every founder has like that one that they're like, oh yeah, if I wasn't doing this, this one would be so successful. But
what is that? Let's see.
I think one that I'm always surprised doesn't exist is like, now I guess you would call it like Cameo for consultants. I think there's like a really huge gap, and maybe it's easy to say, I think so, you'd have to prove it, but we got really close to starting this. There's a huge gap in between a Google search and hiring someone to get their opinion. What's interesting about social media is there's enough social proof for a bunch of like people who know the answer to things that I should just be able to ask them kind of directly. But it's like, right now I either have to like book a time with someone and talk to them for an hour to get an answer, or I got to do a Google search. And so if I wanted to know how I should do my landscaping, I would go on Pinterest, or I would hire someone to come out and give me opinions. But really, I should be able to go to like a micro influencer on Instagram and be like, here's a picture of my front lawn. And in 10 minutes, they could probably be like, yeah, put this bush here, this flower, and like mock it up on a computer. I don't have to talk to them. And in 10 minutes, they've mocked up something that looks great. And I'd be willing to pay like $50 for that, so that this micro influencer could like use their talents to make like, what is it, like $300 an hour, just doing like quick iPad work. There's like that interaction, I think, could like scale really big. That's the one that doesn't exist that I think someone could crush.
Yeah, that's actually a fascinating idea, because, you know, you look at like TikTok, someone could give a 90-second reply for $30 or $50 just to get their 2 cents. And then to actually build out the whole proposal, you pay a consulting fee.
Yeah, exactly. Which is the like levels there are huge. And if I could get that price down to $50, I'd maybe use it 6 times. Like, how do I look? What haircut should I get? How should I redo my fashion? What picture do I put on this wall? What should I make for dinner? How do I like, what are my workout routines? Like, that search engine for like human idea cap, like it is not a Google search. It's not a consulting. It's like somewhere right in the middle.
Social media as its like delivery mechanism.
I think the delivery would have to be like Cameo-esque, where it kind of goes off social media. But yeah, Social media is the perfect like social proof for like, oh, I trust this person to like give me a good opinion.
That's really interesting.
I don't know. It maybe not work, but that's the one that, like, if everything went down today, I'd do that tomorrow.
Well, request for startups for anybody in the audience.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, if anyone's interested, hit me up. I'd love to help someone build that. And then the one that exists, there's so many. I really got to give credit to Bobby Healy from Mana. They do drone delivery. And drone delivery is so tricky, but, like, I really feel like he's going to do it. He's like one of the best entrepreneurs I've ever met. Yeah, I think they're on the right track. They're in Ireland, but, like, if I had to go join a startup today, that's the one I would go join.
Wow, that's cool. I'll have to check them out. My last question is about your vision. Where would you like to see Pipe Dream in 10 years from now?
Our internal goal, and, like, kind of like what we have written down everywhere, is make hyperlogistics possible this decade. I think, like, my pinned tweet used to be 30-second delivery times this decade. Kind of that thing that runs in my head all the time is, like, I'd love to make one 30-second delivery this decade. That's number one. And then 3 years after that, I'd love Pipe Dream to be at a place where, like, yeah, we've made hyperlogistics possible, it's scaling. And even more than that, like, I would love for it to be the place where if, like, an engineer who is, like, super creative, like, really creative engineers who are also really competent, like, their first thought of, like, where should I go after this is Pipe Dream. Because, like, one, we really, like, give a high amount of ownership to those people. It's a really creative place to work. And, like, we are not stopping at hyperlogistics. If we have achieved that, we are looking beyond and, like, you know, tackling bigger stuff. Obviously, that's like a decade out. Like, we got to get there first. But, man, that'd be kind of like the perfect. I would love that. That's the dream.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing some of these pipes and having a couple of things delivered in New York or elsewhere. And Garrett, thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much for having me. And then can I throw one question back at you real quick?
Sure.
Okay, so what is your, like, business in the back of your head that, you know, if everything crashed tomorrow and you had to start a business, like, what is that idea you're like, oh, yeah, that's the one. That's the one I would do right now.
That's a great question. You know, I don't have one. I think the space that interests me most is probably infrastructure in, like, all sorts of forms. And what that really means is I just heard Toby Luca talking about it on a podcast with Patrick O'Shaughnessy of Invest Like the Best. And he talks about how if you look at what Shopify is doing, what he's building, you have the internet and then you have payments. And it's like an hourglass with the internet on one side and payments on the other. And Shopify takes that tiny little middle layer that all the sand has to fall through and makes it wider.
Oh, and interesting.
Yeah. And when you think about infrastructure, there are all these businesses that are taking super high CapEx things like TSMC, for instance, one of the most valuable companies in the world. Before them, every computer company had to build their own chips. And now they build the chips for everyone. They don't design them. They just make them. And no one can make chips out of sand the way they can. And if you just do that with an up-and-coming industry, you find something that has super high CapEx that is essentially a bottleneck for anyone to go into it. You know, SpaceX has pretty much done this by dropping launch costs from, you know, millions of dollars per kilogram to thousands of dollars per kilogram. Now you can have space startups, whereas before that, there were no space startups because you can't get into space. And you can just repeat this for, like, any major booming industry. There's some type of technology shift plus, like, a company that often comes in and provides this middle layer. And that middle layer, you just make so much money by being the infrastructure that
everyone needs. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's such a cool analogy. The hourglass.
Well, you know, he runs Shopify for a reason. So.
Yeah, right. That's awesome. So, like, what industry do you think you'd want to, like, do the infrastructure? Like, what do you think is, like, bottlenecked right now that you could widen?
I don't know. I keep finding interesting startups that are doing it, right? So there's one in biotech where one of the newest platforms for biotech in general is using bacteria to build proteins and then taking those proteins and using them for all sorts of things, from, you know, drugs to, I know a company, Helena, that's putting human proteins into baby formula and making it a lot more breast milk. And there's this company, Culture Bio, and they're like, okay, you tell us what proteins you want and the DNA you want in your bacteria, and we just have essentially wet lab factories that just print your proteins. They're called Culture Bio because they culture the bacteria and then they make the proteins. And I don't know if Helena works with Culture, but when I talked to Helena, they were like, yeah, the hardest part is finding like wet lab space and the people who can culture bacteria. And then I talked to Culture and it was like, oh yeah. And the investor at E14, which is a investment fund that invests in companies out of the MIT Media Lab, I had him on the show, and then he told me to talk to the founder of Culture because he said it was a lot like TSMC, but for biotech. So I don't know exactly where. I'd have to look for like a booming industry. I kind of always am, but finding somewhere where there's like really broken infrastructure. One thing I really like is GovTech, and not GovTech like selling into the government, but companies like Main Street or Propel, who just released an episode on today. They're just building a better software app on top of really broken government infrastructure. So Propel deals with, they're like 40 million people on food stamps, and Propel built them a really good app, and they used to not have one. So things like that, I think there's a million government experiences that are bad. Yeah. Where you can just build like a software UX on top of that's really good and make money kind of forever because the government will never get better and people are legally obligated to work with the government. So
and it's permissionless. Like Main Street doesn't need the government's permission to make it easier.
Exactly.
They're just making it easier. Yeah, that's so cool. Like putting the software layer over the top of broken systems and fix them without anyone's permission is genius.
Yeah. So I'd probably go looking in government for a space that's just like extremely painful, or maybe where there's a lot of really expensive consultants, and then build a software product on top of that that just does all the paperwork, eliminates the consultants, does it for a fraction of the cost.
Ooh, that would be sick.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Paperwork I've had to do. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, sweet, man. Well, yeah. I think it is great, great hanging. Honored to be on the pod. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And no one asked me questions, so this was fun.